There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Into the final hour of today's show. Mark Archer has taken his leave. He's off to Maidan. He's off to put on his suit and enjoy an evening of Dubai World Cup horse racing. We'll be back over to Maidan to speak to Chris McCarty, who's keeping an eye on the remaining races on today's card. We will shortly be in conversation with TalkSport commentator Adam Bridge. He's at Mount Old Trafford to watch Manchester United take on Swansea. But a quick update on the early kickoff, Carl.
Tell you, Robbie, it's a half of missed chances, especially if your name is Christian Benteke. Missing two clear chances for Crystal Palace. 82 minutes play, the score still 1-1 there. But the big news is Adam Leilana, after coming onto the field 3 minutes later, has left the field for injury. So not good news there for Adam. But currently at Sellers Park, 82 minutes played, Crystal Palace 1, Liverpool 1.
Right then, our featured game at 6 p.m. is, of course, Manchester United taking on Swansea. Looks like Liverpool will fail in their bid, as things stand, to go second in the table. They've played two games more than Manchester United now. United, 16 points adrift of Manchester City, but so far second in the table. They are taking on 14th placed Swansea City, who have had a remarkable recovery under coach Carlos Carvajal. It's time now to get the thoughts and the team news over at Old Trafford from none other than TalkSport commentator, a good friend of the show, Adam Bridge. Adam, a very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, guys.
Adam, any team news filtering through at Old Trafford that you can bring us?
Yeah, very much so, particularly from the Manchester United perspective. Five changes in total from the team, of course, that were victorious in that FA Cup quarter-final against Brighton. Most of them fairly unsurprising, really. Romero obviously departs, he's injured at the moment, but De Gea would have come back in anyway. Eric Bailly drops down to the bench, as does Luke Shaw, Scott McTominay and Anthony Martial, which means De Gea, Lindelof, Young and Pogba and Sanchez both come in to the starting lineup for Manchester United today. So reverting back to that 4-2-3-1 formation with Pogba alongside Matic in the heart of that midfield, and then Sanchez next to Mata and Lingard, with Lukaku leading that line as ever for Manchester United. As for Swansea, as you expect, really, staying with his three at the back in Van der Hoorn, Fernandes and Mawson. Andre Ayew having to play out front, of course, because Jordan Ayew is still out suspended after his red card against Huddersfield. So very much looking to continue as they have been. Of course, he put a weakened side out in their cup quarter-final against Spurs, but Swansea back to full strength today.
I can tell you it's that man Mohamed Salah again, who has added to a second goal for Liverpool. Liverpool now leading Crystal Palace 2-1. But let's focus on Manchester United if we can for the moment, Adam. A little reprieve, I suppose, in terms of the fixtures for Jose Mourinho. There was that extraordinary 12-minute rant, wasn't there, following the Champions League loss to Sevilla. He came out in very much defence of the way things have gone for him this season. He's been at war with some of the players, Paul Pogba not least, Luke Shaw, looking like he may leave the club at the end of the season. Is there real pressure now on Jose Mourinho in the run-in to wrap up that second spot and just kind of keep the Wolves at bay, really?
I think the second spot is probably the be-all and end-all for him right now. It would show an improvement on last season, of course, when they finished outside the top four. And they, of course, still have the spectre of potentially winning the FA Cup. So I think Mourinho would look back, and to any of his detractors or people who wish to criticise him, he would turn around and say, I've delivered you second place and I've delivered you another trophy. That's a vast improvement on what you were getting before I came to this football club. Now, you have to temper that slightly, because I think deep down, what will be worrying him more is the gap between himself and Manchester City, and potentially that spectre, of course, that next weekend Man City could well wrap up the Premier League in the game against Manchester United. So those things will be what are troubling him, and I think he's already got half an eye on next season, going, how on earth can we try and bridge that gap and get closer to Man City? And in my mind, some of the criticism, particularly post-match after Brighton, is very much about trying to make that point and lay the foundations and set the ground rules as to how much of a problem it is for Manchester United closing in on Manchester City. He clearly wants more players. He clearly doesn't trust a lot of what he's got now. And it's very much the Mourinho mind games. There is a train of thought that says he's already starting to plan his departure strategy, because he knows he cannot get to Manchester City and therefore he'd rather walk away.
Very interesting. Looking at his counterpart today, Carlos Carvalho has done extremely well since he's taken over from Swansea. Do you believe he's done enough to keep them above the relegation zone?
Well, five wins in 10 games. I mean, it's impressive, but I think it shows the magnitude of the job and the task that was before him, the fact that they're still only 3 points clear of the relegation zone. It's been a terrific run. They're certainly playing much better than they were before, and I think it wasn't expected by anybody. Maybe even Carlos himself didn't think he'd turn it round in quite the manner he has. But the reality is it could all still come to nothing, because they are, you know, they're far from safe. They've got some good fixtures coming up to give them an opportunity. I mean, West Brom away next time out is going to be a key game for them. But then they've got a run of Everton, Manchester City and Chelsea before they take on Bournemouth and Stoke. So it's not going to be easy for them. And that kind of makes today's game quite interesting, because both really do need the 3 points.
Yeah, we saw Paul Pogba in the goals for France during the international break, Adam. Romelu Lukaku getting on the score sheet for Belgium as well. That's a boon, isn't it, for Jose Mourinho's side, having those players come back in form. Given they won this reverse fixture back in August 4-0, it would be hard to look at anything other than a fairly routine Manchester United victory today.
Yeah, when they secured victory at the start of the season, they were very much in a mode where they were powering sides or overpowering sides in the last 10 minutes of games, and that was very much being driven by the likes of Pogba and Lukaku, their physical presence, their general fitness, and their ability to continue for the 90 minutes and beyond, and kind of almost wear teams down. That's been lacking in a lot of Manchester United's play since kind of October time. I mean, Pogba is an interesting one. The fact he was completely left out against Brighton, has gone away with France, clearly not in a decent frame of mind. Didier Deschamps has had his say, of course, on the Pogba situation at Manchester United as well. And it's fairly clear that all is not well there. We know that he prefers to play Pogba in a three, but today he's playing as part of a two again, which may well frustrate him a little. He did, of course, pick out Matic and Lukaku as being the two players who are delivering for him right now, and they did in that FA Cup quarter final. So, all in all, when you look at the two forms, on paper you would feel this would be easy for United, but I don't think Carlos Carvalho is going to make it simple for his good friend Mourinho today, and I think this is going to be a tough battle for United.
Got to get your thoughts before we let you go, Adam, on the international break. England securing that draw against Italy, beating the Netherlands 1-0 courtesy of Jesse Lingard. What did you make of England? Any signs of optimism ahead of Russia in 2018 and some eye-catching results, it has to be said. Spain 6, Argentina 1 was certainly one of those. And, of course, Brazil gaining a modicum of revenge over Germany.
Yeah, I think, I mean, with regard to England, I think you take some positivity from it, but you can't get carried away, would be my belief in it. I think Gareth Southgate's doing a good job. I like the way we're trying to play football. It is very much a work in progress. I think this World Cup will come too soon to see England come to fruition, but the signs are very good. And when you do look around Europe and you see some of the form that sides like Brazil are showing, obviously Argentina taking that beating at the hands of Spain, but without Messi and a few others as well. I mean, it's going to be an interesting tournament. It's interesting to see that Dutch side that England got the better of then, of course, managed to do a job on a kind of second-string Portugal side as well. So I think there's a lot of posturing going on. I've not seen anything that makes me think the big sides won't come to the fore once more once we get to Russia in June and July.
Well, listen, Adam, thank you as ever for your input this afternoon. We'll let you go on and continue your preparation for Manchester United against Swansea. Looking forward to that live commentary kicking off at 6 p.m. local time in the UAE. Thanks, Adam.
Pleasure, guys.
Adam Bridge there, TalkSport international commentator, and a pretty cut and dried looking fixture this. Of course, it's always a bit difficult to predict the score in the Premier League, but we have seen Liverpool, and we mentioned that during the chat with Adam. Mo Salah, that man again, Carl van Roosevelt, he's pulled them out of the fire again.
I tell you what, he just can't score enough goals. He's been absolutely, absolutely unbelievable this season, and as you say, come at the man, and once again it was Mo Salah. A cross ball came in, he put it on the right foot, put it in the back of the net, and it seems, well, it's 4 minutes extra time, Robbie, 90 minutes played, 4 minutes at a time, but to me it seems like Liverpool might have just stolen this one.
What a result this would be if they can hang on. As Carl mentioned, 4 minutes of added time and they're into 45 seconds of it thus far. When we come back, we're crossing again to Maidan. Chris McCarty is our man with an eye on all things horse racing.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
20 seconds left on the clock between Crystal Palace and Liverpool. I can tell you it is Crystal Palace 1, Liverpool 2. Mohamed Salah, again, the saviour, the goal scorer. He can do no wrong in a Liverpool shirt. Chris McCarty, you will be delighted to know that he is my captain this week.
Mo Salah is your
captain. Is he yours? That is the question I will ask. Is he yours?
He is not, Robbie. No, it's Romelu Lukaku, who is my left field pick this afternoon. So I'm looking for 9 goals from the big Belgium in a 9-0 win for Manchester United this afternoon.
That is very shrewd. We've just been speaking to Adam Bridge over at Old Trafford. Confident he is of a Manchester United victory today. They were 4-0 winners in the return leg, the reverse of this fixture back in August, when they could do no wrong in the last 10 minutes of a game. But slightly different situation now. Carlos Carvajal coming back into it. What are your thoughts ahead of this fixture? Swansea look like they're hauling themselves to safety. United, having had that break and that win in the FA Cup, will be looking to return what has been a pretty decent run of Premier League form, hasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you're right to point that out. Sevilla aside, it has been a decent run for Manchester United, beating Liverpool on their own patch. The same with Chelsea, coming from a goal down to win that one. So Manchester United, you would expect to get the victory this afternoon, no doubt about that. Swansea will not make it easy for them at Old Trafford. They'll look to shut down the space. They'll probably, in actual fact, look to retreat, sit off United, give them the possession up until the final third. And we've seen United struggle up against a packed defence. There is a lot, and there's a huge onus this afternoon on Alexis Sanchez. Jesse Lingard, I see Juan Mata starting as well. I'm not a fan of Paul Pogba in a midfield two. For me, and I've said it time and time again on this show, defensively he does not do his work. I don't think I think his awareness is pretty poor for a £90 million player. So yes, there'll be those listening that say, come on, you're at Old Trafford, you're up against Swansea, Matic holding, let Pogba go and play. But so often we've seen Pogba struggle in a midfield two. His best position is in a midfield three. I guess the problem for Jose Mourinho, does he have the men alongside Pogba that can get the best out of him? And right now you've probably got to say no.
We're looking forward to that one. Live coverage and live commentary of that one, courtesy of Adam Bridge and his team at TalkSport, from 6 p.m. here on Dubai 103.8. But let's look back, Chris, if we can, to history made in the Dubai Gold Cup. Vizarabad, the French horse, the favourite for this race, doing everything he needed to do to fend off the advances of Sheikh Zayed Road and Rare Rhythm.
Absolutely, yeah, it was a class act, and all credit to Christophe Soumillon. Didn't panic, Vizarabad got off to a pretty poor start. The beauty of it is, as you rightly point out, it is for the stayers over the 3,200-metre mark. So just settled in nicely. Christophe Soumillon down the home straight, produced an absolute masterclass on board. A horse that will go down in history, a history maker, a legendary horse now as well. 3 successes in the Dubai Gold Cup. That is not to be scoffed at. It's never been done before. And we're into the 23rd edition of this Dubai World Cup. So thus far, Vizarabad will be on the front covers, I'm sure, of a number, or back covers as the case may be, of a number of newspapers, both locally and internationally. Of course, that could all change as we build up towards the big one. It is the Dubai World Cup, and who knows, we may see Godolphin, the blue colours of Godolphin, yet another success. It would be a 7th, and it could well be an 8th success for Saeed Bin Sarur.
And we go from 2 miles on the turf to 1 mile and one furlong on the dirt. We're building up just 8 minutes away from the UAE Derby. Chris, what can you tell us about this one? Mendelssohn is highly favoured. Godolphin still to get off the mark in this Dubai World Cup day, but Gold Town would seem to have a pretty good chance under the careful auspices of William Buick, the jockey, and Charlie Appleby, the trainer.
Absolutely, I'll put my neck on the line here and say that I fancy Gold Town to get the victory. Those that have been listening to our broadcast all afternoon will know that I've not been that lucky with my predictions, but Gold Town will start as one of the favourites. Had a couple of wins locally as well. Charlie Appleby, I know, is very happy with the work that has been done by Gold Town. William Buick will be on board. What I would just temper excitement a little bit by saying that there are 3 horses trained by the legendary Aidan O'Brien. You mentioned there Mendelssohn. There's also Sea Henge, and let us not rule out the wonderfully named 3 and 4 pence. So Aidan O'Brien will have a big say in this UAE Derby. I've got to say, though, the favourite for me, and I'm expecting a victory for Godolphin, the blue of Godolphin, it is Gold Town, and it is William Buick who is on board that particular horse. We're underway in 5 minutes, Robbie Greenfield, and I've got to say now as well, I did say a little earlier that it was a bit quiet down here. Not the case now. It's jam-packed. Aprons Views is full, and I'm enjoying my little vantage point up here in the media booth.
Tell you what, this race is featuring a number of horses who are wonderfully named. We've got Taiki Fervor, which is a Japanese horse, and we've got the Yulong Warrior as well. So 3 and 4 yep. pence has got some competition in terms of the best named horse in this one. That gets underway in just a few minutes' time. We will have live commentary of that race. Chris, before we let you go, I just got to ask, have you spotted Bob Baffert yet, and is he wearing his trademark white shirt and jeans combo?
I have not spotted Bob Baffert yet, but I can tell you there is no doubt, Robbie Greenfield, that he will be sporting the tight jeans. He's got tighter jeans than I normally wear, so he does, this Bob Baffert, and he will be wearing a crisp white shirt. The man is sartorial elegant, is Bob Baffert, and he will be quietly confident that, and it would be a remarkable story if he does go and get success this afternoon with West Coast in that Dubai World Cup, having, of course, trained the winner, the legendary Arrogate, to success. I've said it time and time again, and I will repeat this afternoon, arguably the most impressive sporting performance we have seen on these shores. What we witnessed from Arrogate 12 months ago was extraordinary. It was goosebumps, it was hairs in the back of your neck, and fingers crossed we get as something as thrilling later this afternoon.
Well, Arrogate was a grey. Bob Baffert is the epitome of a silver fox. So I hope you do catch up with the legendary Bob Baffert. And I've got to tell you, we have failed conspicuously to get a photo thus far with Ronaldinho, who is still sat, but he's in a crowd of people. It would be a bit rude to just to bowl up to him, but when he takes his leave of absence, maybe he goes for a comfort break. We've got our eye on him. We will be rushing up to try and get a photo with the legendary Brazilian. For now though, Chris, enjoy the race.
Top stuff. Thanks, Rob.
Right. It is the UAE Derby. It is taking place in a couple of minutes' time. We will be crossing for live commentary of the fourth race on this Dubai World Cup card. But Mark Archer, Carl Van Rosenvelt, I'm getting my legendary pundits confused here. It is a win for Liverpool in that early game.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, it's that man Mo Salah once again, actually hitting it on his right foot, putting it in. But you've got to think to yourself, Crystal Palace will be absolutely furious, especially Christian Benteke. Open goals, two opportunities for the big Belgium striker, and he just didn't convert it. So at the end of the day, Liverpool 2, Crystal Palace 1. And Roy Hodgson must be a bit of a worried man, because all of a sudden he's creeping closer and closer to that relegation zone, Robbie Greenfield. So it's a day, I'm sure, being at home, Crystal Palace were hoping to get something out of this game, especially with their early lead that they took from the penalty spot. But as you say, a day of missed opportunities for the boys of Sellers Park.
It's going to be a very, very nervy last eight games of the season, seven or eight games of the season for all clubs. Well, placed between 12th and 20th, really. Even Brighton on 34 points are not 100% safe from the drop. But you've got to fear for the likes of Southampton, who are on 18th position at the moment. Stoke in 27th. West Brom are doomed on 20 points. But then you've got West Ham on 30, Huddersfield on 31, and Palace, as you mentioned, on 31 points with a minus 18 goal difference. They need some results in these last seven games of the season. We can cross now, I believe. Well, not quite yet. I'm being told we cannot cross quite yet to the live commentary of the UAE Derby. But what I can tell you is there has been another wicket down in Johannesburg, Australia. They saw South Africa make a first innings total of 488, just missing out on that 500 mark. And Australia have not begun their innings well. They are 38-4-2. Matt Renshaw, he was out for 8, bowled by Philander, caught Quinton de Kock, and then bowled Rabada and caught Duplessis. Faf du Plessis, the captain, was burned. So we've got Usman Khawaja at the crease on 18, and he is joined by Peter Hanscom, who is yet to get off the mark. Australia toiling in Johannesburg. Carl.
Yeah, they're in trouble at the moment, and I think South Africa have got them quite in the position exactly where they want them. But, you know, at the end of the day, we always knew this was going to be a big ask from the Australians. New captain, new opening order, and a lot of pressure on Australian cricket, especially in the media at the moment.
We have to talk golf very soon because, of course, the Masters starts on Thursday, and I am pretty excited about that, as I have been making it publicly known for a long time. But we can now cross back to Maidan for live commentary of the UAE Derby.
The front runner Mendelssohn, given a breather now by Ryan Moore, shows the way a length on Yulong Warrior. Over on the inside is Raya, followed by Gold Town, then Reed Ride, 3 and 4 pence. Moving up on the outside, Taiki Further goes up 4 wide around the other Japanese runner, Rajiro. And back at the tail of the field is C. Henge. Off the back they come now in the Derby. They've got 800 metres to go, and Mendelssohn does it well as they turn down the side. Running to second, Gold Town being pushed along. Raya over on the fence. They were followed next by Yulong Warrior, then Taiki Fervor, Ruggiero re-ride. A gap off in the field to C. Hench and 3 and 4 pence, but Mendelssohn's the one to get. It is jog trotting as they come to the top of the straight. Mendelssohn's out by a half dozen over Raya. Gold Town flat to the floorboards down the outside, followed by Yulong Warrior, Taiki Fervor, Ruggiero, but it is Mendelssohn well clear inside the final 250. It's going to make a one-act affair of the UAE Derby. Mendelssohn en route perhaps to the Kentucky Derby is going to absolutely jog up. Mendelssohn's out by 15 on Raya, battling on re-ride, followed by Gold Town, but what a win by Mendelssohn. Mendelssohn by a conservative 17 lengths. Second Raya, third across the line re-ride, followed by Gold Town. Next in was Sea Henge, followed by Taiki Fervor. Then came a Yulong Warrior. Next in across the line, Ruggiero, and pulling up at the rear was 3 and 4 pence.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
We're building up to live commentary of Manchester United taking on Swansea at Old Trafford. A reminder, that game gets underway at 6 p.m. just after we finish here on The Grill for this coming Saturday. But Manchester United, they will line up with David De Gea, as ever, in between the sticks. Antonio Valencia, Victor Lindelof, Chris Smalling and Ashley Young play across the back. Paul Pogba and Nemanja Matic in Chris McCarthy's much-disgusted midfield too. He doesn't like that move at all by Jose Mourinho. One matter, Jesse Lingard and Alexis Sanchez will play behind the lone striker Romelu Lukaku. And then Swansea, well, they've got Fabianski in goal, Van der Hoorn, Fernandez and Mawson across the back. They've got a five-man midfield of Olsen, Klukas, Sung Yung Ki, Andy King and Kyle Norton. And then a two up front, Nathan Dyer and Andre Ayew. Predictions for this one, Carl? Your beloved Manchester United going
to
do the job?
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty tough today, and I think Swansea will throw to them, but you should think that United will have too much firepower, especially at Old Trafford. I kind of fancy United 2-0 win.
Australia have lost another wicket. Peter Hanscom is out for a duck. Things starting to look very bad for the baggy green over there. It is a bad week turning even worse for Australia. A remarkable...
I'm not complaining, Robbie Green. I'm not complaining at all.
You are loving it. The Proteas are doing a job here down in South Africa, down in Johannesburg, looking to wrap up a 3-1 series win. And it's been one of the most eventful test series I can ever recall. There has not been a single match that has passed without some kind of off-the-field incident, as well as a lot of fireworks on it. We saw 11 wickets in that match for Kagiso Rabada. He was then banned. He was then brought back in. Of course, what happened with Quinton de Kock and David Warner was just a precursor to the unravelling of the entire Australian cricket setup in Cape Town. And once the dust has settled, Carl van Roosevelt, where do Australia go from here? The new coach, obviously, is a priority after Darren Lehman's resignation. But can they be competitive? They're touring India at the end of this year. Can they go there? And
absolutely.
It's in Australia, isn't it, of course? Sorry, India will tour Australia. But you have to almost fancy India away from home.
No, I think Australia will rebound. It will be interesting who they select as the coach now. A lot of names will be put in the hat. Justin Langer's up there. Gillespie's up there. Brett Haddon is up there. But I think Australia have got so much depth within their cricket pool that I reckon they'll be a force to be reckoned with in no time. Obviously, Steve Smith will be a big, big blow to them. But there's always a youngster in the wings, Robbie, you know, that will come through that we surely haven't heard of. And I believe that within Australia, there's so much depth within their cricket players. I think come the series against India, I believe it's there towards the end of the year, they'll be once again very, very competitive.
Right, we will switch our attention now. I cannot believe it has taken us over 2.5 hours to talk golf, Carl van Roosevelt, because there's a small matter of the Masters this coming Thursday. It is the first major of the year. We have spoken to celebrated coach of the world number one, Dustin Johnson, Claude Harmon III. You will hear that interview on Wednesday Sports Tonight in our official Masters preview. No European Tour event this week. There is an event over in America, the PGA Tour, the Houston Open is taking place. Ricky Fowler and Jordan Spieth are in contention there. Bo Hostler leading on 11 under par through two rounds. But Sam Ryder, Ricky Fowler, as I mentioned, Abraham Anser and and Nicholas Lindhern are all at 10 under par, and then a big group of players on 9 under as well. Paul Dunn, the Irishman, Bronson Burgoon, what a name that is, and Jordan Spieth. Interesting that he is finding a little bit of form in what is always his favourite week of the year. The Masters, a winner in 2015. How he lost to Danny Willett in 2016 is still a head-scratcher. He came second in 2014 to Bubba Watson, so he's got a wonderful record at the Masters. Those 3 years, tied for second, won, tied for second as well in a tournament that he really should have won, were it not for a couple of visits to Ray's Creek on the 12th hole. But interesting that he's finding some form, and it is the most open Masters that I can remember, Carl, because you've got Rory McIlroy off a win at the Bay Hill at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. You've got Ricky Fowler finding some form. You've got Justin Thomas, who's had such a great start to the year. Phil Mickelson won in Mexico. Tiger Woods has been playing so well. Great finishes at the Valspar and at Bay Hill as well. The list of contenders is a long one.
The interesting thing that you have just said there is Jordan Spieth, ex-champion, showing great form. Bubba Watson has won the tournament twice. He's showing some great form. Phil Mickelson, first time he's won since the Open in 2013. He won it in Mexico 3 weeks ago. He's once again showing great, great form. He's a three-time winner. And then Tiger Woods has had, is it four top five finishes in his last six tournaments or something like that? And he's won the Masters, I think it's four times. So all of a sudden, you've got these string of players. Throw Rory McIlroy into that pool. Throw Justin Thomas into that pool. I tell you what, it's going to be absolute, absolute fantastic showdown. Justin Rose has been playing very well. He came second last year. And I tell you what, defending champion Sergio Garcia, he hasn't been having a bad year either.
Certainly. Who can forget him? Or the man who he beat in a playoff last year, Justin Rose.
Exactly.
In fact, I think we can hear from Justin Rose fairly shortly. But let's get a recap of where it all began for the Masters tournament, the most fabled tournament in all of golf.
When Clifford Roberts and Bobby Jones first started talking about this golf club, they had always wanted to hold the U.S. Open, but then it became a critical marketing idea. We need something to put the course on the map. At that time, the U.S. Open had never been held farther south than Illinois. So what Roberts realized was if they were going to hold a tournament, they were going to have to create their own. And if they wanted people to come to it, Jones was going to have to play in it. And Jones didn't want to play in it. The reason he wasn't playing was that the USGA had declared that he was a professional. He had taken a lot of money from Hollywood and from Spalding, and he was no longer an amateur. The workaround that Roberts came up with was to, in all of the tournament literature, he made no distinction between amateurs and professionals. It was just a list of players. And so Jones could compete without having to sort of acknowledge that he was a pro. A lot of what we think about as a golf tournament nowadays started at the Masters. The Masters was the first tournament to play over 4 days instead of to play two 18-hole rounds and then one 36-hole day. Something we take completely for granted today, over and under scoring, you know, giving a player's score in relation to par was an innovation at the Masters. It was Frank Cherkinian, the CBS producer. And if you watched broadcasts before that innovation, it's like an arithmetic test. It was the first stadium course, really. It was the first golf course that was shaped repeatedly and dramatically in order to improve the experience for people who were watching it, whether on TV or on the grounds. It's probably the most altered golf course anywhere in the world. People like it, and the tournament grew because the club has always focused on reinvesting in it and improving it every year, even once it got to the point where you think that, you know, this is great, why continue to sweat it?
A little history there on the Augusta National Course. Surely one of the most storied venues in all of sport, Carl. It's got a mystique, that tournament, even though cameras are all pervasive now and everything is so inclusive and, you know, so much more thorough, I think, in the world of broadcast than it used to be. I remember growing up and you never really knew any of the front nine holes because the coverage would only ever start on the back nine for the last 2 hours of play. And those holes are etched into the consciousness of any golfer, aren't they? The 13th, that par 5, the 12th, which is just a short hole, but has caused so many problems, not least for Jordan Spieth a couple of years ago, but for Fred Couples as well, en route to his victory, his lone Masters win in 1992. Greg Norman came a cropper on the 12th hole when he was dueling with Nick Faldo. It's a majestic, beautiful course, and every single hole on that back nine has a majesty to it, doesn't it?
Well, the saying is that the Masters hasn't started until you get to the back nine. And I think, you know, history has proven that, to Robbie. And you've just mentioned a couple of perfect examples. You know, we can even look at the year that Rory was leading by I don't know how many shots, and all of a sudden...
Three, I think.
And on the final day, you know, it all came undone. But I think that is the fantastic tradition of this wonderful tournament. And, you know, every year you go to Augusta, everything just seems perfect. The bunkers are perfect, the greens are perfect, the fairways are perfect. And I think once again this year it's going to be absolutely fantastic. One part of the tournament which people don't really speak much about is I enjoy the little par three, normally the day before where, you know, they bring the old...
It's a jinx to win that, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah, the winner of the par three tournament has never won a green jacket. So you don't want to win the par three tournament. Coming second is good for that. But we've seen Niall Horan play there.
Absolutely.
I believe Caroline Wozniacki.
She carried there. Well. Yeah, I don't think we'll see her there this
Perhaps
year.
Perhaps not.
But, yeah, fantastic to see all the previous champions like, the late Arnold Palmer, of course, Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, all these players that do appear at this great event. But to me, golf at the moment is in such a healthy state because it's such a competitive game. There's so many players that can win every week, and this crop of youngsters that are coming through at the moment, they're absolutely phenomenal.
The man that will dominate the headlines in the build-up to Augusta as we get set to welcome all the players down Magnolia Lane, the official starters, Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player. Sadly, Arnold Palmer no longer with us, but those two will be getting things underway very early on Thursday morning. It is a tournament that is steeped in tradition from the Butler Cabin to Amen Corner. It really is one of those majestic tournaments, and it really is quite special in the world of golf. And the player that will be taking up many of the headlines in the build-up is a certain Tiger Woods. He's put out a blog a little bit earlier on today. He's described himself as a walking miracle, Carl. Now, of course, his trials and tribulations are well documented. He had spinal fusion surgery following the failure of a back procedure after the Dubai Desert Classic last year. So in 2017, he had a procedure, not the first one, on his back to relieve that the pinched nerve that had been causing him so many difficulties. There were times when he couldn't even get out of bed. He wondered whether he would even walk again. And the last resort was this spinal fusion surgery. There is no precedent for a golfer to come out on tour who's had this procedure done and actually be successful on tour. Tiger Woods is not only back out on tour, but he seems to have put the problems he had with his short game, the yips that he was suffering with his chipping, they now look far more of a physical nature. The problems that he had with his back probably rooted in the fact that he couldn't even chip correctly or was having difficulty making precise contact with the ball. His putting has been good. His ball striking has been eye-catching. He could have won the Valspar. Didn't putt well on that Sunday to finish runner-up behind Paul Casey. And then, of course, he contended as well before Rory McIlroy ultimately made those, five birdies? He shot a 64, did Rory McIlroy, on the final round of the Arnold Palmer Invitational to win that one. But I'll ask you this question. Would it be the biggest story in the sport this year, forget the Australian cricket scandal, if Tiger Woods wins the Masters?
I'd absolutely love it. I just think that...
You sound like Kevin Keegan there. I would love it.
I would. Because so much has been said about Tiger, and you know, a lot of people said he would never, ever come back. But to me, golf is so much better when Tiger Woods is playing in his competitive, Robbie. And we've seen that in the viewership. We've seen it in the audiences attending the golf course. And I think it would be a fantastic, fantastic story. Fantastic comeback story. You know, I'm the romantic. I love it when Leicester City win the Premier League, when the underdogs, when the Cubs win the World Series. And for Tiger Woods to come back and win the Masters, to me, it would be absolutely fantastic.
And the second biggest story would have to be Rory completing the career Grand Slam if he's able to do that, to win the green jacket. It's the last piece of the puzzle for the Northern Irishman. He's won the US Open. He's won the Open Championship. He's got two PGA Championships. His game is tailor-made for Augusta, but he's always seemed to struggle on the greens there.
Yeah, and I think that's the one big thing about Rory. And to me, the reason why Rory actually did well at the Invitational, actually ended up winning it, is because finally his flat blade was working. And to me, that's why Jordan Spieth is always a threat at the Masters, because to me he's ultimately one of the greatest putters on tour. And to me, Rory is still not consistent enough with his flat blade. And I believe if he can come into this week being consistent with the putter, he will definitely be in contention. Because to me, from an all-round game, he's absolutely fantastic. He's got one of the most beautifully looking swings. His iron play is phenomenal. He drives at a country mile, but it's always been his putter that's let him down. And even in that final round of the Arnold Invitational, the first nine holes, he was lipping a couple of putts. Finally, he got the flat blade working in that back nine. But he will need that consistency throughout the 4 days to be a major champion, or Masters champion, should I say.
The countdown is on. It all begins Thursday morning, the Masters. Looking forward to it. I will be absolutely camped out on my sofa for those 4 days. Cannot wait for Masters Sunday. Such a special day.
Who's your pick?
It's tough. I would have said Justin Thomas, but you have to look at track records and you have to look at past performances at Augusta. It's a place where it's very rare to see someone who hasn't done very well in the past suddenly show up and do well. And Justin Thomas, he's only played two Masters, but I don't think he's finished higher than the 22nd in those two appearances. So that, to me, is not enough pedigree on that golf course to win a green jacket. I would say him by form. And that's the interesting thing. It's form versus tradition and history. And Jordan Spieth, up until this weekend, had shown no form. But then as soon as he puts something together, you got to think, with his track record at the Masters, that he'll be right there. I can't see Tiger winning. I just can't. I mean, I'd love to. You and I, we both love the romantic story. But I just can't. It would be amazing. But I think he'll contend, he'll fall short. I think it'll be that classic Sunday charge. He'll go out probably an hour before the leaders. He'll get up there for a short spell, then he'll fall away a bit. That's kind of how I'm seeing it going for Tiger Woods. But I'll say Jordan. I think Jordan will do it. You know, he's the Open champion. He's class. If he gets his putter going, he loves that golf course, and there's nothing to be said. What about yourself?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Of course, I'd love Rory to win it. That would be the ultimate for me. But I'm going to go with the two old dogs. I think the final pairing will be the two lefties, Phil Mickelson and Bubba Watson. And I reckon Bubba to sneak a third Masters.
There you go, Bubba. That would not be a popular victory for me. I don't want to see.
Not at all.
Jacket. Oh, dear, oh, dear. Give me Rory or Tiger any day of the week over Bubba Watson. More chat on all things sport when we come back. We're with you through until 6. And after that, it's live commentary from Old Trafford, Manchester United, Swansea City.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai iSport.
The Premier League is back and we will have live commentary of the 6 p.m. feature game. It is Manchester United taking on Swansea City at Old Trafford. We gave you team news earlier on for that one. Paul Pogba starting alongside Nemanja Matic in a midfield two is the interesting team selection from Jose Mourinho. Earlier on this afternoon, we saw Mo Salah, that man again, the Egyptian who can do no wrong. That's 30 goals, I think, this season in Premier League. I think I'd have to check that, but it is an incredible haul from the Egyptian. Might be 29, but he's bearing down on the 30-goal mark for the first time, I think, since Cristiano Ronaldo in 2008, that a player will have scored over 30 goals in a Premier League season in all competitions. There's a few more than that. He scored the winner against Crystal Palace, left it late after Sadio Mane had equalised. Mihailovic scored from the penalty spot to put Roy Hodgson's side in front. What have we got looking forward to at the 6 p.m. games in the Premier League? Aside from Manchester United, Swansea, we've got Brighton and Hove Albion taking on Leicester City, Newcastle United taking on Huddersfield Town, Watford playing Bournemouth, West Bromwich Albion taking on Burnley, West Ham, they face Southampton, and at 8:30 p.m. you can hear live commentary of this one as well, Everton hosting Manchester City.
But I tell you what, a very, very important game this afternoon is West Ham against Southampton. That is a fight for that relegation spot.
I hate to use the cliche, but it is a six-pointer, isn't it, that one?
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. So some very interesting fixtures this evening, as you say, in the Premier League. And then, of course, tomorrow, from a Premier League perspective, what we've got to look forward to is Arsenal. If I can just get on that schedule. Arsenal taking on, I believe it is, Stoke. Stoke also in big trouble. And then, of course, the fantastic London derby, Chelsea taking on Tottenham. That's at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening, Robbie.
That's tomorrow's games. This evening, over in La Liga, Las Palmas will host Real Madrid at 8:30. And then the late game there, that sees Sevilla take on the conquerors of Manchester United in the Champions League. And quarter-finalists now in the Champions League, they host Barcelona, the runaway leaders of La Liga, and that one gets underway at 10:45 p.m. We are also keeping an eye for you on the Dubai World Cup. We've been including race commentary and coverage from Chris McCarty, the head of sport here at ARN, throughout the course of this afternoon's show. And coming up at 6:05 is the Alcoz Sprint, if you're heading down to Maidan to catch a bit of racing action. The big one, Dubai World Cup, that is 8:50 p.m. That is the $10 million showpiece. Before that, the Dubai Shima Classic at 8:10. The Dubai Turf at 7:35, and then after the Alcoz Sprint at 6:40 p.m. the Dubai Golden Shaheen. So a good afternoon and evening of racing ahead of us, Carl Van Roosevelt. We are not going to be there, though, are we?
No, we're not going down there, but we will be watching with interest. As you say, the second richest horse race in the world, Robbie. And it's, as you say, it's always a fantastic humdinger. Those of you who want to keep up to date with rugby, at 7:15 this evening in Super Rugby, the Bulls take on the Stormers. We then got in the European Rugby Cup, Munster take on Toulon. This is a big one at 6:15. Cognac took on Gloucester this afternoon. Gloucester winning that one 33 points to 28. And then the Cardiff Blues take on Edinburgh. That game kicks off at 8:45.
Over in the cricket, Australia struggling in Johannesburg. South Africa had made 488 in their first innings. Australia 55 for 3 in response. They've lost the wickets of Matt Renshaw of Burns and of Peter Hanscom, bowled for a duck by Vern Philander. It's Khawaja who's on 33 not out, and it's Sean Marsh on 3 not out for a depleted Australian side. We did spend an awful lot of the first hour of this show discussing the unravelling, the fallout of Tampa Gate, the removal of Steve Smith as captain, of David Warner as vice-captain, and of the coach, Darren Lehman, who stepped down in light of the fact that Australia, they need a clean slate and a new beginning and a revision, I think, a look into, a root and branch regeneration of their entire cricketing setup. But it'll be interesting to see how those stories develop over the coming days and weeks. In fact, David Warner refused to implicate any other players in that saga. So it's those three players. It's the batsman, Cameron Bancroft, the opener, who was the ball tamperer, and the two architects of the idea, at least, that we're led to believe, David Warner and the captain, Steve Smith, the much-vaunted leadership group, in quote-unquote inverted commas. But that is all we've got time for. We are going to now wrap things up here at Barasti. We're going to head downstairs to watch the football, are we not, Carl van Roosevelt? Because coming up in a couple of minutes, it is Manchester United taking on Swansea City. And you will hear live and uninterrupted commentary right here on Dubai 103.8. All that left for me to say is a very good afternoon and thank you very much to Carl van Roosevelt.
Yeah, good afternoon. Have a good week and can't wait for the Masters starting on Thursday.
Looking forward to that. Much more build up to the Masters and all other big sporting events on Sports Tonight from 7 until 9 p.m. midweek. But until then, we're off to watch a bit of football. Cheers.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.